Before we get too far today, though, I am going to ask Mario Butler to come on up. Let's welcome Mario here today. Yeah, thank you. So Mario has been a part of the meetings that happen on Monday, and this is actually the first time I've seen him because on Microsoft Teams, I can, you know, at least I can see you guys. You usually can't see me because I usually have a black, but I get to see them. So I've seen Mario for a long time and heard his part in the discussions, but this is our first day, and we are so grateful to have Mario here today. And one of the things that's nice for us to do is just to take a few minutes to get to know people before they begin to preach. And so, Mario, if you don't mind, a few things I want to ask you about. First one is, like, who are you? Where are you from? Whose family? You know, like, did you come from Grand Rapids, Fargo, North Dakota, Saturn? You know, where are you from? And tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, so I'm from Grand Rapids originally, born and raised here. Love the city of Grand Rapids. But a lot of my family comes from Texas, Mexico. Also, I have a lot of family that lives in Chicago, pretty much anywhere that you can think of. But most of them, my nuclear family is right here in Grand Rapids. Okay. Born and raised here.
Who's nuclear family?
Mom, dad, brother, sister, my daughter, 18 years old. I have an adult daughter, so all of you who had adult children, you understand the transition period.
That's been going on for the last 5, 6, 7 years, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Transition.
Well, you know, she's been adult since she's been 12.
Right. Exactly. So in terms of, like, how did you get, like, you're a part of Cornerstone now. Mm-hmm. I know you've been going to South Wyoming campus, but, like, what do you do for work? How do they connect with you? How did you get connected with Cornerstone?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I was originally going to Kentwood Community Church. I'll start with the second question. I was originally going to Kentwood Community Church, and I felt God just kind of whispering to me about Cornerstone. Had no idea that I was going to end up here and doing some teaching and preaching. And so I just obediently followed the voice of God, and this is where it's led me to. And so that's the first part. Second part. The first question is that I worked for Bethany Christian Services. Work in the youth services department, so we serve teens between 14 and 18 years old with curriculum, and also we employ up to about 100 youth per year. 100 youth per cohort, so it's a lot of youth that get employed and work through us, and we pay them $12 an hour. And so if you have children, this is a plug, if you have children at that age, or if you have grandchildren who have children, please come talk to me. We can get them plugged in.
Great. So this is a little bit of a setup, but because I saw the picture in there, but
yeah.
I wanted to kind of ask you, like, what's fun for you? But you're going to say something I think that I'm just not expecting. So
well, you know, I kind of like to live life, you know, on the edge sometimes. So I like to do a lot of traveling, but I always like to say that I like to take life by the horns. And so there's a picture I want to show you guys here. And so if you can look closely, that's me circled in the cyan color, kind of right in the middle. I was able to travel to Spain and participate in the running of the bull ceremony. It's called the Viva la San Fermín in Pamplona, Spain. And just had an absolute fun and terrifying time.
Did you get run over?
No. There was, unfortunately, a few people that, you know, were on the floor behind me and next to me. But
yeah.
Everybody made it pass through. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
How many people would call that fun? Raise your hand.
Nobody.
Mario, you're one of a kind. Well, Mario, again, on just behalf of all of us, we are grateful that you're here, but also we just pray God's blessing over you today, that you would be God's mouthpiece, that it would be what we need to hear from God's lips, or from God's heart through your lips to our ears. So.
Thank you.
Thanks. Blessings. Let's thank Mario for being here. And then I'm gonna pray for us too.
Well, good morning, church. Good morning. It is so good to see all of your faces. And I am excited to be here this morning because of the fact that Gideon is certainly one of my favorite characters to talk about and to learn about. And so this is our final week here. And our last series, not here at the church, but our final week of this series called Level Up. And so the reason why this series is so important, I had to share with you all a story that I encountered that changed my life. Now, riding on the north side of town in Grand Rapids, I was with one of my mentors. And this mentor played a very important, vital role in my life. And as we were having conversation, he says to me, "Mario, I don't know if you have the time, but make time. You need to spend time reading through the book of Judges, and you need to learn about a person named Gideon." And I have to say that when I finally laid my eyes on Gideon and the story about faith and about God's miraculous ability to demonstrate his power in our weaknesses, I felt that I was unstoppable. Now, for me, the most important message that came from this was that when I feel small, God is big. Now, the Israelites were experiencing this sort of smallness in the book of Judges, chapter 6. Now, what we see here is that the Israelites, they were being oppressed by the Midianites and the Amalekites and the eastern peoples. And we see that recorded in scriptures according to Judges chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. It says, "The Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and for 7 years he gave them into the hands of the Midianites, because the power of Midian was so oppressive. The Israelites prepared shelters for themselves in mountain clefts, caves, and strongholds. And whenever the Israelites planted their crops, the Midianites, the Amalekites, and the other eastern peoples invaded the country. They camped on the land and ruined the crops all the way to Gaza and did not spare a living thing for Israel, neither sheep nor cattle nor donkeys." And so we learn here in this small set of scriptures that the Israelites, they were doing evil in the sight of the Lord. And so they were kind of caught up in a cycle. And by this time, 5 people in the book of Judges have been sent in order to be Israel's deliverance. And so what we saw is that they were constantly being caught in this, "Oh, we are sinning against the Lord, and we cry out to the Lord to deliver us." And so over and over again, we see them returning back to the same state of mind. They would sin against God. They would go through a season of oppression. And then they would experience a miraculous deliverance by one of the people that God would send. But the issue that Israelites were facing is that they were honoring and loving foreign gods that was not the God, Yahweh, was not the God, the King of Kings. And because of that, this is why the oppression came across the land. Now, the Israelites were forced to hide in the caves and the mountain clefts and certain strongholds. And the adversaries, they were very powerful. They were the Midianites, the Amalekites, and the eastern peoples. And these were very powerful adversaries within the region. And it is also said, if you do some studying, that the Midianites were almost cousins to the Israelites. Now, the Israelites were the adversaries, had camped in their land, ruined all of their crops in Gaza, all the way to the western southern border. So if you can imagine, this is the lower western border of Israel. And this is how many people ravaged the land at that time. And so imagine growing grocery shopping, and your mother, your father, you're preparing food, and you take a nap, or you take a trip, and your family comes over while you're sleeping, right? And then they eat all of your food. And so you wake up and you're hungry. They left you absolutely nothing. Or imagine one of your teenagers comes in, you set that sandwich to the side, and then you come back from work and that sandwich is gone, and you're like, "But God, I was just hoping that I could have something to eat." And so the Israelite constantly experienced this famine or this thing happen over the line. Or I would even say, you can probably equate this to the Bernstein Bears. You know, little Goldilocks sneaking into the house, eating the bear's food. And this is the very same thing that the Israelites were experiencing on a constant basis. So the sheep were being taken away. The cattle were being taken away. The donkeys were being taken away. So Israel was in a constant state of devastation. And so I just wanted to set some of the context of what we're reading here. And so finally, what the Israelites decided to do is to cry out to the Lord for help. And so in doing so, in their desperation, God has sent them a deliverer. God had identified someone to bring about Israel's deliverance. And so what we see here occur in Judges chapter 6, verses 11 through 12, it says, "The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak tree in Ophrah that belonged to Joash the Abiezrite," close enough, "where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a wine press to keep it from the Midianites. And when the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, 'The Lord is with you, mighty warrior.'" Did it ever occur to you that Gideon was threshing wheat in the wine press? Is anybody familiar with what a wine press is? And it's usually regressed and underground or deep enough where they're stepping on grapes, they're getting a grudge, but actually what he was doing there at that time was threshing wheat. And so imagine wheat at the very bottom of this threshing floor, the threshing floor at the very bottom of this wine press. And so this tells us that Gideon was also scared about what was going on. He was a little nervous about the food being taken away from them. And so this threshing is also very symbolic about what was happening and occurring in the land of Israel. And so this was also something that was very important as we're thinking about this. It was symbolic because the Midianites, God was threshing the Israelites and purifying them from the idols that they were experiencing. This is also significant where God had called him, because at this time that God was also separating Gideon to be Israel's deliverer. So it was very significant that God had called Gideon at that time. And so in this, he says to them, "Pardon me, Lord." Like, "Pardon me, Lord." And he says to them, "If the Lord is with us, then why has all this happened to us? And where are all his wonders and the ancestors had told us? And the Lord has abandoned us and given us to the hand of the Midianites." And so the Lord had returned to them, and he said this in verse 14. "The Lord turned to him and said, 'Go in the strength that you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you?'" And so again, he turns again and he says, "Pardon me, Lord." He says, "How can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family." And so the Lord had turned to them, "I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites, leaving none alive." Now, this is very significant because of the fact that he said that God, that the angel of the Lord says, "I will be with you," insinuating that it is not his strength that is going to be delivering his people. It is, "I will be with you. The living God will be with you." And he calls Gideon a mighty warrior, even though he felt as though that he was this small and insignificant person. And so once again, this theme comes up where it says that when I feel small, God is big. Now, Gideon, he saw the outside circumstances. He saw that Israel was being ravished over and over again. He was looking at the current conditions, but he was not looking at the conditions or from the perspective that God was looking at. And so we often see when we come across difficult circumstances in life, when life seems to be overwhelming, when the bills are overwhelming, when we get sick and we can't handle these things, we often don't look at the current conditions that God is able to bring us to. He says that I am with you. And the Lord Gideon told you, I will be with you in your own strength and your own power. So if we are learning to trust in God, we can trust in his power to deliver us. We can trust that God will give us the strength that we need in order to do this. Now, there's nothing too big. There's nothing too big for God. And so God had created the heavens. He created the earth. God split the Red Sea. He is also able to heal the diseases. And we also see in scriptures that Jesus has walked on water. Now, Gideon, he had a very little view of himself. In verse 15, it says that my clan is the weakest and I am the least of my family. I have little strength and my family has no stature or no power. And so we have a tendency to believe the lies about ourselves based upon our own experiences. But when we look and align ourselves with God, we are able to experience his delivering power. Now, God sees something completely different within us. If we spend time and we're building consistently our relationship with Jesus, we are experiencing and God has a different perspective on who we are. He called Gideon a mighty warrior, but Gideon did not see himself as this mighty warrior. There was a person that I met recently in Boston. His name was Larry. He was an older gentleman who was 65 years old, and 5 years ago, he had shared with me that he was diagnosed with peripheral vascular disease. And it's a disease that hurts the flow of blood within your system. And so as a result of that, he had lost all his limbs. And sometimes in these circumstances, it can be dire. And this perspective that he had after I talked with him, I asked him, I said, hey, brother, how do you live out this faith? He says, I had asked God to give me a mindset of abundance. I have asked God to change my perspective so that I can see myself from his lens. I have asked God to help me experience his power and experience something that I cannot see within myself. So he began to start taking on heavenly perspective. And so for this man to be here in Philadelphia is where I met him. He was full of joy. He was leading Bible studies at the place that he was living at. He still had this sense of vigor and anticipation and excitement about life. And so sometimes I think it's also our perspective, and we have to ask God for his perspective. Now, Gideon is called by God a mighty warrior. And so sometimes God's perception of us transcends our own perspective. And Gideon believed that his strength and his familial status was limited, especially facing a vast army like this. And so the Lord had called him a mighty warrior. And what limiting views are we holding on to that keeps us from living out the will of God? And so I believe that if we are close enough and continuously building our relationship with God, we are able to take on God's perspective for our lives, that we are able to take on challenges, that we are able to face challenges, that we are able to tap into the power that God gives to us by our relationship with him. What limited views are we holding on to that keeps us from experiencing God's power and his authority within our lives? Now, Judges chapter 6, verse 33 through 35. Now, all the Midianites, the Amalekites, and other eastern peoples joined forces and crossed over to Jordan and camped in the valley of Jezreel. Then the Spirit of the Lord came on Gideon, and he blew a trumpet, summoned the Abiezrites to follow him. He sent messengers throughout Manasseh, calling them to arms, and also in Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali, so that they too would meet with them. And so the Spirit of the Lord came on Gideon, and before he got to this place and calling on God, and what he did is that he had tested the Lord with a fleece, saying, Lord, if you are in this, let the fleece be dry, let the grass around it be wet. And if this is what you're doing to be Israel's deliverer, then let the water or the dew be completely wet, and then the fleece itself be dry. And so God had given him exactly what he needed, the encouragement that he needed in order to move forward into deliverance. So he was able to muster all of the people. He sent messengers to all the surrounding people, bringing about this great army that we see that is summoned here. Now, and all together, from all the different tribes, from his own tribe, the Abizrites, the people from Manasseh, and all the people from Asher and Zebulun and Naphtali, we see that Gideon was able to gather 32,000 men. Now, Judges 7, chapter 7, verse 1 through 2. Early in the morning, Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, and all his men camped at Spring of Herod. The camp of Midian was north of them in a valley near the hill of Moreh. The Lord said to Gideon, you have too many men. Too many men? What do you mean too many men? 32,000 men isn't too many? What do you mean? I don't understand. Too many men? And so the Lord has spoke to Gideon and told him, send all the men home that are fearful, that are trembling, that are scared, that are not, that does not want to be there. So he sent them home, and at that moment, 22,000 people left. And so only 10,000 men were left in this case. And 32 to 10,000, I would say that's a downgrade. I would rather go in with more men. But no, God wanted to get glory in this story. God wanted to glory through Gideon's weakness. The Lord said to Gideon, too far. Now the Lord told him that you have too many men. Separate them, right? Separate them at the brook. So he had shared with Gideon that the men who lapped the water to their mouths from their knees, those would be the men that he takes. But all the men who got on the floor and laid on the ground and put their mouths to the water, those were the men that he was supposed to send home. And after separating them, there was 9,700 men that left at that point that he sent home. And so at this point, he only was left with 300 men, and God had promised them to save and deliver the Midianites into their hands with 300 men. Now, I don't know about you, but how many of you would be terrified to go against an army of this large? How many would be terrified? Like, I wouldn't be able to breathe. I wouldn't be able to exist. I would be shaken. I would probably run. And but scholars believe that it was so many men on this field. It was approximately, it's saying that it was about 132,000 men camped in the valley. It said it's about 132,000. So 300 men against 132,000? That's scary. That is scary. Now, the Midianites, the Amalekites, and all the eastern peoples had settled in the valley as thick as locusts. Their camels could no more be counted than the sand of the seashore. And so he was absolutely terrified. I had imagined going down to attack this camp with only 300 men. And I don't think that I would be able to do it unless I receive some encouragement from God. And what we see along the way is that when we're facing these circumstances, God would always find a way to give us encouragement. And so during our faith walk, God offers the timely encouragement that we need. And so what we see in scriptures is that Gideon was sent down to near the camp to hear a dream that one of the men of the Midianites had heard. And the dream had went something like this, that a loaf of bread, a barley bread, hit the camp and it overwhelmed it. And the person that Gideon had taken with him was his servant or his mate, Purah. And Purah had interpreted this dream saying that this is no other than Gideon, God given the Midianites into the hands of Gideon. And so what we see here, after this moment, he was instantly encouraged. He was instantly charged with faith to go out and to muster his men. And so he tells them to get up. The Lord has given the Midianite camp into your hands, dividing the 300 men into three companies. He placed trumpets and empty jars in the hands of all of them with torches inside. While each man held his position around the camp, all the Midianites ran, crying out as they fled. And when the 300 trumpets sounded, the Lord caused the men throughout the camp to turn on each other with swords. Now, he instructed his 300 men to go into these groups. He placed them around a camp, 100 in each one of these groups, a jar in one hand, a horn in the other. But where's the sword? And so I was appalled by the story. I was shocked that it was just the jar and the torch. And Gideon had instructed the men to sound the horn, to break the jar. Now, they shouted at the top of their lungs, a sword for the Lord and for Gideon. Now, for me, I think this story is very significant. And as we see that the entire camp of Midianites were overtaken, they ran and they fled. And it had nothing to do with what Gideon was doing. But as we see throughout the book of Judges, that Gideon was obedient. He listened and hearkened to the voice of the Lord. Not only did that, but he took some risks to go forward to see and experience God's glory and his splendor in this place. I can imagine that Gideon was feeling extremely weak or extremely small in these circumstances. I can imagine Gideon feeling absolutely terrified. I can imagine Gideon experiencing all of this. But when we are small, God is big. Now, there was a moment in my life where I experienced these very moments. I shared with you earlier about Gideon and where I first learned about him, and about how God, through our weaknesses, gets his glory when we see and experience his strength. It's my first year of actually being a person who follows God, and this was many years ago. And so I started Bible study in a living room house on California Street here in Grand Rapids. And in the Bible studies, we were meeting on a very frequent basis, meeting Mondays and Wednesdays, and it was a huge group of people that were coming to the living rooms. And there were people upstairs in the apartment. There was a lot of people that came in and out of there. And there were some unfriendly guests that were upstairs, let's just say that. Now, what had occurred is that over a period of time, one of the ladies who were living in the house as we were doing Bible study had went upstairs and confronted the men. And one of the men, at gunpoint, threatened the young lady. Absolutely terrified. I can imagine she was feeling scared, had some bubble guts, did not know what to do. And so what we had decided to do is that we got together and we went on a 3-hour praise and worship session, asking God to work on our behalf, asking God to demonstrate his delivering power, asking God to do something on our behalf. And so what had happened, we went on this 3-hour praise session, and no more than a few days later, the police had came and evicted them, removed them from the premises. But not only that, We experienced God's miracles. There was a woman who lived in the house. It was the mother of the three ladies living in there. Her mind was distorted. She could not work. She had anxiety and depression and overwhelmed by these things. And we began to start praying for the household, and we've seen God's miraculous power through the Bible studies by introducing them to Jesus, that this woman's mind was completely restored. Not only was it completely restored, but she went back to work full time. Not only did she go back to work full time, but she started teaching and leading Bible studies with me. Not only that, but the entire family started going back to church. The entire family became delivered. The entire family came under the authority of Jesus. And so what we saw firsthand in these circumstances, where these young ladies were feeling weak and fragile in these places, we were able to see God firsthand demonstrate his power in healing this woman, delivering the young lady and the daughter from demonic oppression. And so in my very first year, after reading, or really God setting the foundation through reading Gideon, I was inspired and encouraged that my God can do anything. That my God can deliver, that my God can heal, that when I am weak, my God is big. And so I want to challenge every one of us here in this room that if you're currently facing or dealing with difficult circumstances in your life, and it seems too big, and it seems impossible to overcome, I want to challenge you to take that feelings, those pains, those hurts to God. And young children, if there's a bully at school or some homework assignments that is too hard, pray and ask God to help you. The next question is God leading you to follow him to live out his will for his life, for your life, but you're terrified of what the outcomes could be? And so sometimes we're in these circumstances where we feel utterly weak or powerless. But we have to remind ourselves constantly that God is in this, that the Lord, the God, is with you, and he is able to do abundantly more for us and with us as we're pursuing him. Is my circumstance too big for God, or is my view about God too small? I'd like to close this out in prayer at this moment and just encourage this congregation. So, Father, we thank you. We give you praise, glory, and honor. I ask that you will continue to show us your power, your glory, that when we are experiencing these weaknesses, that we will turn to you for your power, for your strength. May we experience how you desire to love us in these spaces when we need you the most. I give you praise, thanks, honor, and glory to your name. Amen.